Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Now at this time every Wednesday we are making babies with the Professor of the National Maternity Hospital. Shane Higgins is with me of course in studio. This is for anybody on any part of the baby making journey. We are here for you. So if you have just conceived, perhaps you're thinking about preconception, ovulation, struggling to get pregnant, all of these are conversations that we've had. The podcasts are on the News Talk, the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live if you'd like to listen back. Today though, Shane, we are talking to people who have maybe just found out they're pregnant. They've done the at-home test.
Yeah, good afternoon, Andrew.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, so you've done your home pregnancy test, and most home pregnancy tests now are very sensitive. They're exactly the same tests that are used in hospitals if you were to present to the emergency department or early pregnancy unit. So you can rely on those tests, they have significant accuracy. So from here, you're going to kind of consider your lifestyle choices. Obviously, you may have already amended those, but, you know, cigarettes, smoking out, cut down your caffeine intake, make an appointment to see your GP, start thinking about what the model of care you want, which hospital you want to attend. You have the right to choose any hospital in the country if you want to attend there for maternity care. So you don't have to choose one that's particularly close to you. But most people will do that. They will go to their local maternity hospital, which will provide excellent service. But these are the things you need to start thinking about. In terms of your lifestyle, again, continue to exercise. And I think it's very important that women recognize that they can continue to exercise right through pregnancy and remain as fit as they possibly can. Increase your fluid intake, maybe take some supplements. You should already be on folic acid. So these are just the basics that you should consider at this stage.
Okay, so you go to the GP. That's interesting. So you can actually look to become a patient.
Yeah.
Of any maternity hospital.
Absolutely.
So it's not just the one that's in your catchment or your locality.
No, we've done heat maps in the past of patients that would attend or have attended the National Maternity Hospital. And although the bulk of our patients would be from the south side of the city, counties Wicklow, some from Kildare, we actually get some patients from North County Dublin, Meath, who use because it's on a rail link directly down into the city centre, and they use that as their mode of transport to get in and out to their appointment. So
okay.
They can absolutely choose that.
So what's interesting about that is that I know quite a few friends from over the years that maybe were living in Dublin, perhaps during COVID or in recent years, Shane, they've moved out of Dublin city centre. And a lot of people will think, oh, do you know what, I know the consultant there, or I've dealt with them, or they have my files, and maybe I'm better off to stick where I am. But are you better off to be, you know, is it the vicinity or your close proximity to a hospital? Is that of more importance? Or
yeah, well, there may be a point during the pregnancy where you have to attend your maternity hospital as an emergency. So the idea of driving two and a half hours back to Dublin to a hospital that you may have attended previously doesn't make enormous sense. And there will come a time when you're in labour or you think you're in labour and you need to go in and get assessed. So again, proximity is important. It's not the be all and end all, but I think it is something that you absolutely need to consider when considering the hospital that you're going to attend.
If you've questions for Professor Shane Higgins today, 087 1400 106, that's the WhatsApp number. Just before we do, Shane, come to some of our listeners' queries about this. Sure. So people will be on, women will be on folic acid, I suppose, already at the preconception stage.
Yes.
But what additional supplements should they start taking once they've found out they're pregnant?
That's a good question. So, you know, what we've recognised over the last maybe 20, 30 years is how much the diet has improved of most pregnant women. So apart from folic acid, there's no imperative to take anything, but a lot of patients will feel that they'd like to just supplement. So you can go into any reputable pharmacy and you'll pick up some antenatal vitamins and minerals, Proceive, Pregnacare, Blackmore. There's a whole range of different providers and you just pick up one. They all provide essentially the same. Apart from that, there's not a whole lot else. A lot of patients will be prescribed iron at some point during the course of their pregnancy. It's probably a bit early to be considering it at this stage. Some will require calcium if they're getting leg cramps or magnesium. But really, if you're talking about the 4 to 8 week, there's not a whole lot you need to do apart from increasing your fluid intake, continuing your folic acid, and maybe starting an antenatal supplement.
Listeners wondering, Shane, what are the most common symptoms of pregnancy during that first 4 to 8 weeks?
Well, it's a really good question, because some patients are really terrified of this. Some patients will not describe any symptoms and some will have nausea, some vomiting. This is what we refer to as the hyperemesis gravidarum, or vomiting related to being pregnant. They may feel that they're retaining a little bit more fluid. Their breasts are becoming more tender, and they all start to enlarge at this stage. So these are the common signs and symptoms. But what I would caution patients about is that the disappearance of some of those symptoms does not necessarily mean that there is a problem with the pregnancy. They tend to settle anyway at some point in the pregnancy. So if one day you're feeling really, really unwell with nausea and vomiting, and the next year you're not, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem. The cardinal feature of concern would be any vaginal bleeding at this early stage of pregnancy. And that's where you should go and have perhaps an early scan to ensure that all is well.
So once you have that initial consultation with your GP and they, I suppose, further confirm the pregnancy and talk to you about access to hospitals and the type of care and that kind of stuff that's out there, when can you expect to have your first scan, or what is the first scan?
Well, most hospitals will offer what's called a booking antenatal visit at about 12 weeks of pregnancy. So that's where you will come in. There will be a very detailed history taken. They'll start to do the assessments of your blood pressure, your urinalysis, testing your urine for protein and sugar. That's when you can expect to get your first scan. A lot of patients don't want to wait until that point in the pregnancy, so they'll get an early scan. Some hospitals, like our hospital, will offer a scan service for patients who've had a previous miscarriage. We actually have a clinic called the TLC Clinic, which specifically looks after patients who've had a history of pregnancy loss. But you can go to a host of private ultrasound providers around the city, and you'll be able to get an early scan at 8, 9, 10 weeks. That's when patients will also start to consider the non-invasive prenatal screening tests that are available to screen for chromosomal abnormalities. And it's around that sort of 10, 12 week mark that people will be considering. That's the earliest you can do it. So they'll be considering that even perhaps before they make their or have their first appointment with the hospital.
The text from this listener, Shane: I'm now 5 weeks pregnant. I live in a commuter town close to Dublin. My sister-in-law said that I should study the policies of each hospital in Dublin, as some are quicker to C-section women in certain situations than others. Is that true?
No, I don't think it's true at all. And I only work in one, so I can't count or comment on the others. But I don't think any hospital is quick to section patients. I think the policy is to section patients when it's required. And I think most hospitals will stick to that. I think we are seeing a rise in the cesarean section rate. It's almost year on year for the past 20, 30 years. And it's due to a host of different factors. And it would be almost a segment to itself. But the section rate is rising. But it's not because hospitals are quick to section patients.
Is it, like I can tell, I suppose it leads into my next question, which I'll come to. Is it down to the request of patients? Is it down to patients' age?
There are two of the factors, and certainly we are seeing a very small number, but an increasing number of patients who are requesting it. Some of them have very good reasons for requesting it, but there are some patients who are coming in, and you would be in the indication for section would be maternal request. The population is getting older. The average age of patients is rising year on year, and one in eight babies born at the National Maternity Hospital are born to women over 40. And most of those are very, very healthy babies, but they're patients who are perhaps more inclined to end up with a cesarean section.
087 1400 106, if you have a WhatsApp question for Professor Shane Higgins today. This listener, Shane, is 17 weeks pregnant currently, says that she's terrified and scared about labour. Can you choose to have a C-section?
Yes, you can. I mean, that's the simple fact of the matter. You can request a cesarean section from your healthcare provider, and I would advise the patient, if she is fearful at this point in time, there's still 20 plus weeks to go before she has to have that baby. Plenty of opportunity to discuss that with her healthcare providers.
Whether you're public or private, is that right? You can make that decision.
I don't think there should be a distinction. If a patient requests a cesarean section and they have been given all the information with which to make that informed decision, then I think
anyone
can have it.
Yeah, okay. Listeners asking, Shane, what are the most common risks in early pregnancy and how can I possibly try to reduce them?
Well, there's very little you can do. So the two big risks are obviously miscarriage and ectopic pregnancy. And they're both complications of pregnancy that we see every single day. So if you have any bleeding, if you have any pain in your lower abdomen with a positive pregnancy test, particularly if it's on the right or left-hand side, then you should attend your hospital immediately for them to either confirm the well-being of the pregnancy and particularly to exclude an ectopic pregnancy. But just go back to the cesarean section on request. Cesarean sections aren't without risks. And I think, you know, you shouldn't embark upon that course of action without giving it considerable consideration and thought. Mm. And if you're planning on having a family of 2, 3, 4 children, If you have a cesarean section, your first, you're very likely to have them in your subsequent pregnancies. And they carry a risk with each successive pregnancy of a condition called placenta accreta. And that's becoming more, you know, we're talking about that more, but it is a very serious obstetric complication. And avoiding cesarean section is a way of avoiding placenta accreta.
Okay. Now, this listener has got in touch to say, just a warning to your previous question, I chose an elective C-section and it wasn't covered by the insurance provider. So I suppose something people need to check out.
It is something you need to check out. A elective cesarean section for maternal request isn't something that we believe is will be covered by your insurer. So that is something to take into consideration.
Yeah, okay. Now, listeners wondering about sleeping. I'm in the early stages of pregnancy and I've been told that I should aim to sleep on my side. Is that right?
No, you're fine for the moment. If you're up to about 20 weeks, so the weight of the pregnant uterus as it gets bigger and heavier will compress the blood return from the lower half of your body, leading to reduced blood return to the heart. And it can make you feel really unwell, dizzy, lightheaded, vomiting. So it will have that impact on you as, at the same time, if not before, it has any impact on the blood flow to the uterus. So if you start to feel dizzy, lightheaded, nauseous, if you're lying on your back, then you should roll onto your side. From about 20 weeks onwards, you shouldn't be lying on your back flat. But if you put some pillows in behind you so that you roll back onto what we would refer to as a wedge, that's absolutely fine. Or if you're in a semi-recumbent position with pillows up behind your back, that's fine also. Sleeping on your hips, whether it's left or right, will sooner or later become very uncomfortable and you'll start to complain of hip pain. So look for solutions. The pillows behind your shoulder, your lower back, your thigh will help you to roll back, but not to the flat, and that will be sufficient.
Listeners looking for advice, recently had her second baby, both C-sections, went to go for a VBAC, but wasn't progressing with labour, so decided to have a section again. The first was an emergency. Is it possible to go for a VBAC if it was to go again? First two pregnancies were close together, only 13 months between the two kids. When they operated, they realised that my womb was opened and said it was good that I'd opted for a section as it could have been a further emergency. They said I should now wait a minimum of 18 months before going again to give the scar time to heal.
Yeah, so the general rule is if you've had two cesarean sections, then you will have a cesarean section for any subsequent pregnancy. There have been very occasional exceptions to that where patients who've had two previous sections do have a vaginal birth, but it is extremely rare and it's not something that we would recommend. The risk is that the weakest part of your uterus following a cesarean section is the scar. And if the pregnancy or the labour isn't progressing at a satisfactory rate, then the risk is that the scar will rupture. And that's what we refer to as a uterine rupture in labour. And that's a very serious obstetric complication also. So to avoid that, if you've had two cesarean sections, the general recommendation, in fact, the recommendation is that you have a cesarean section for a subsequent pregnancy. What the healthcare providers might have been referring to is that sometimes when you open the abdomen at a time of a cesarean section, the uterus appears to be very, very thin. And you just wonder whether it would have withstood the rigors of a labour if that was the case. But you never know.
Perhaps C-sections should be a topic for conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, on its
Absolutely.
Own, in its entirety, Shane, for another day. If there's a question you would like asked or answered by the Master of the National Maternity Hospital, Professor Shane Higgins, you can email it into us, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Shane will be back for Making Babies at this time next Wednesday afternoon. Shane, thanks
Look
a million.
Forward to
it.
Not
Take at
care,
all. Thanks
Andrea.
A million for joining us here on the show.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.